Hello, lovely listeners! On this episode, we talk about Capcom's Resident Evil 3 Remake teases, Capcom's home arcade, and we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about Sony's PlayStation 5 plans. You're listening to Dual Pixels Radio, but first, introductions.
I'm Jose.
And I'm Rob, and Joey has the night off. You have one podcast with everyone, and then it goes back to two.
Yes, it's like we're entertaining you.
Exactly.
Yeah, so I guess we'll start off there with what we've been playing. And as usual, I'm first. Well, Joey was first last time because I couldn't make it here. I had the in-laws here, so I couldn't make that fine podcast there last week. But I'm back here, and I actually played a lot of games, like a lot. I've gotten so many things in. And I just want to mention about the Dead or Alive 6. So Dead or Alive 6 got the patch for the lobbies and for the friends invites. Well, I don't think of it's just the friends invites, but it did get the lobby update. And again, I'm going to have my review there by the end of the month there. I wanted to give Dead or Alive 6 another chance because so crazy how a fighting game does not launch with any sort of lobby or friend system. So yeah, I just thought of it as a glitch there, but yeah, the full review will be coming by the end of this month for Dead or Alive 6. So I've been playing a little bit of that, not online though. I've been actually like going through the story again in regards to the why they fight, and I'll have a little bit more about that on future episodes. Don't worry, it's coming, guys. It's coming. Just wait for it with Dead or Alive 6. Okay, so what I've been playing more of, well, not more of, just what I, but the new things I've gotten. I've been playing some Resident Evil 2 remake, and holy hell! I know you, Rob, you have the game.
Yes.
And wow, like I wasn't expecting to like it as much, like, to be honest.
Really?
Like, yeah. It looks awesome. Like, it looks awesome. It plays awesome. But before like going into it, I wasn't looking forward to actually like playing it like I'm playing it. And it's because for me, Resident Evil, like anything that's not Resident Evil 3 is actually scary to me in Resident Evil. Like, there's actually a bit of like anxiety while playing. And with this remake, I'm actually like, wow, like it looks so good. It plays so good that even with, you know, being easily afraid of these things, I'm still like trudging through it because the game is just so awesome and it feels good.
Yes. And I've said it before, like the changes they made to the game were good changes. And instead of like trying to be like, hey, let's try to make it exactly like the original, like they made some modern changes, and I think it helped out a lot.
Yeah, I'm loving it. And yeah, everything about it, I'm loving it. I like that it still has cheesy dialogue.
Oh yes.
Yeah, it's a very engaging game so far. I'm actually pretty far in, and I know the game is short, but for me, like, you know, trudging through a Resident Evil like this, that's not Resident Evil 3. Resident Evil 3, I love Resident Evil 3, and Resident Evil 3, I played with the lights on, the lights off, late midnight, and I was a kid, and I loved Resident Evil 3 for some odd reason. That's the one that resonated with me the most. But this Resident Evil 2, again, with my new TV, the HDR, the new sound system that I got, awesome experience. And I'm excited just to play more of it. And I'm surprised I didn't get it there at launch, because this is truly, I feel Capcom did so much good in bringing this older game into a modern take, I guess. Like you mentioned, the changes were for the good. So I've been playing a lot of Resident Evil 2. So that's one thing. Another thing I've been playing, I also got, was Sekiro, Shadows Die Twice. And what I have to say about Sekiro is people need to actually quit bitching about the difficulty of the game. And the reason why I say that is the game is meant to be played, I see it as the game is meant to be played by the vision of the actual developers. This is how the developers made the game there, with no difficulty settings, and they made it there for a reason, because they wanted you to play it this way. This is more like a artistic playability integrity, and this is their vision of how the game should be played and how the mechanics work in the game. And even though I'm dying a lot, the game is freaking awesome. Like, the game is fluid. And one thing I noticed is that with Sekiro, people with the Dark Soul, the Souls game mentality, I can see why they get flustered with Sekiro. Because with me, when I'm playing Sekiro, I try to do everything in the quickest, I guess, way. Like, I feel like me parrying and me counterattacking fast and getting into the momentum of doing these attacks, I'm actually progressing much further than me methodically pacing myself. If that makes any sense.
Well, it's kind of like Bloodborne as opposed to Dark Souls, where you do better if you're in the thick of it and you know when to do go offensive and when to go defensive. Bloodborne was a lot more, you got more rewarded by being like constantly attacking, as opposed to Dark Souls, where it's more you have to sit back and wait. So I could see that being a thing for Sekiro. Again,
yeah,
I haven't played
no
it, so
stamina.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's no stamina either. And do you know what the game reminds me of, too? It reminds me of a quicker Tenchu.
Well, it was supposed to be a Tenchu, actually.
Yes, you see? So you do know the backstory on Sekiro in that sense, that it was supposed to be a Tenchu. And it definitely, and it gives me that same feel of when I first played Tenchu on PlayStation. And again, I see where the fluster comes in with no difficulty settings, people playing it more methodically and slowly than what I think you're supposed to be playing this in the thick of things, like you said. You're supposed to be fast, you're supposed to be agile, you're supposed to be thinking on your toes while in combat. Mm-hmm. And I find it so much more satisfying than playing it slow and methodically. It just works better. In the way the animations work and the way the gameplay is seen, of seeing it as a spectator sport, Sekiro works better when you're actually in the action and not really thinking too much.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm loving the game because of that. Now, there are a few shortcomings in the sense that there might be a little bit too much Souls elements, not in gameplay, I guess in mechanic, I guess you could call it gameplay mechanic wise, is that not with the combat of that, so to speak. I'm talking about with like the stuff like the save points where the enemies spawn back. That right there could have been done away with. I feel like the game could have still thrived on you killing the enemies and them not respawning. It could have still thrived on that. Just throw more enemies at you in that sense during every other scene, every build-up to every other path in the game. So for them doing that when you hit a checkpoint, all the enemies respawn. That actually, I think, takes away from it. And I don't know if that's more, I guess that's more of my thing there, because I relate Sekiro more like a classic game from years ago, like Super Nintendo era, where enemies didn't respawn. They respawned if you went back, like let's say if you scrolled back to the other side of the screen, but if you died and you had a checkpoint, they didn't respawn in that sense. if you get where I'm going with this.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, there's that right there. That's the one that really does it for me. I wish they could have just, you know, left checkpoint in, but didn't respawn those enemies, but added more enemies to further along the game, like further along going through to your next checkpoint or to your next read point, so there'll just be more enemies. And that could have created a much faster flow on getting to point A to point B instead of fast travel, as fast travel is in the game as well. Another thing with Sekiro there that I think is just too Soulsborne it has too much of a soul's essence is the rechargeable health. When you rest, you do recharge health in a flask. So just like Dark Souls, that mechanic with the Estus with the flask there, where it just recharges health. I feel like there should be more health item drops, and that shouldn't be a thing. And I know there is a lot of health item drops, but I think that part with the rechargeable health should be taken away. And you do die a lot in Sekiro. You do die a lot, but again, there's certain tweaks I would do. And again, it's not to the combat, it's more to just items, and how they work. And yeah, I think that's it. Like, but I really find Sekiro to be a fun game when you're playing it, when you're actually in the combat and you're not thinking about the combat. So yeah, I'll be playing a little bit more about it. I'll be playing a little bit more of it, not about it, but yeah. I'll be playing a little bit more of it, and you know, hopefully by the end of the game, my opinion doesn't change. But yeah, I don't get why people are complaining about the difficulty. I don't even find the difficulty too bad if you go about the combat a certain way. I feel like the game is intentionally made to be played, you know, going completely into battle, just going into it, appreciating the combat system and not thinking too much about it. I don't know if those two words align, appreciating the battle system and not thinking too much about it, but yeah, that could be done. You know, those two definitely separate themselves in just the way that I think it's supposed to be played in that sense. So I don't get the whole fuss about it. I guess people could comment off about this. You know, our viewers could comment just in regarding to Sekiro, and I just want to see what other people think about it in that sense. But I really think it's just very classic gaming mechanics and combat mechanics. So, besides Sekiro, I actually got another thing here. And I got this just because of our talk on the Lodge podcast a few weeks ago. And I actually got a PSVR. Aha. So I got the PSVR, and yes, I was going off about it there, that other episode that we did. And wow. And yeah, just wow. You see, I had a Gear VR, and I talked about it probably about a year ago on one of the podcasts here. And the PSVR completely changes my mind over just VR in general now. After getting some time with the PSVR that's not in a convention and it's actually at home. So first thing I'm going to say is, if you are planning to get a PSVR, get Astrobot. You have to get Astrobot. It is a must. Astrobot, to me, is the game changer, and it is the system seller of the PSVR. So Astrobot is a platformer that you're actually You're actually playing the platformer there, and you're a robot inside the game. So you're a robot actually controlling another tiny robot in a platformer. And the way it works, it's a very brilliant game. There's things there that just wow me, and things haven't wowed me since, well, like this in terms of just the effect that it has, and it really brings me to another level with gaming, or rekindles my love with gaming. I guess like ever since like Super Mario 64, I haven't been like this immersed and impressed from my first time playing Super Mario 64, and Astro Bot feels that way. And once you put on the VR headset there, and we're actually in this world, seeing everything, and everything is so vivid and colorful, and you know, even thinking that the PSVR is not as powerful as the PC VR, this game just really changes things, and everything looks so crisp and clear, and you're like actually in this platforming world, and you're like pretty much the camera there in terms of like controlling Astrobot, the robot. And the game does so many cool things. There's this one level where you're, well, pretty much all the levels feel like this, where you're in the world, you're actually in the world as a robot controlling Astrobot. And you're like the camera to this world. And you sometimes have to move around, turn your head up and down, actually crouch on the floor to look for hidden pathways and look for like hidden things in the levels. And it's just real cool, like being able to do that, being able to be a part of the world, in that sense, and finding all these secrets, finding all these paths for Astrobot to go into. And it's just, you really have to get the VR to actually understand it. I know you guys are probably hearing this and saying like, oh, but you could do that in any game. Like you could go ahead and do that in any game, but not like this. This is just so immersive and just how it's done. There's actually enemies in the game that actually go directly for you, and you have to headbutt them. And it works so well. Like it feels like magic. It feels like wizardry. Just how so immersive things are. There's a few parts there where you're actually like spraying water with your with the DualShock 4, and you have to hit the touchpad down, and you're actually moving the control. Moving the control there, and you're actually like spraying water to the exact position that you're moving the control to. It just feels like so well done, and so immersive. And it's definitely, again, if you're getting VR, get Astrobot. You owe it to yourself, because this is the game that is making me like literally like fall in love with the whole concept of VR being a real thing and being maintainable. This game is doing it for me. Other cool things is that there's like these dandelions that you can actually blow, and when you actually like blow, they actually like really blow off in that sense. And it's just the game does so many things right that I find no faults to Astrobot. It's very immersive, Rob. Like I of you know, if you could get a PSVR soon, get Astrobot, and I promise you that it's gonna be like one of the greatest milestones in gaming to you.
Well,
And I can say
that's
that for
what I
anyone.
hear. I hear Astrobot's really good. If I get a PlayStation VR, I would probably get Tetris Effect first, just because it's fucking Tetris. Tetris and Rez, really. But Astrobot would definitely be one of the top games I'd get after that.
Yeah, and it's so dope when everything just falls in place with Astrobot, with just how immersive it is. but also the level design is awesome. Level design is awesome combined with the music. It's like the perfect package. Just in terms of gaming royalty, it is gaming royalty, and it should be getting more hype than, you know, than it is, because it's, you know, I recently got the word of mouth, how it's like one of the greatest fucking games, and I agree, it's one of the greatest fucking games, but it deserves more. Like, it deserves more attention. Mm-hmm. And, but yeah, I love the game. Just a lot of innovative things in the game to make the game feel fresh. Just being in the world and hearing the music and just being in there, like, you feel a part of it. Like, it's very hard to, you know, talk about it. Where in this case with VR, you do have to feel these games because, you know, like I said, you might think it's just a regular platformer, but it's not. It's not. It's something very, very special. And I do wish that, you know, it gets a sequel. I do hope that it gets a sequel. So Astrobot, game changer in VR. And I'm so excited for just whatever's coming to VR, because I also tried a Res as well. I was trying some demos out. Res is awesome. I actually had to put it down for a bit because it was getting too intense. The music and just the lights. it was getting way too intense for me, so I had to put it down. I also played the Resident Evil 7 demo. Yeah, and I just noped out of it. I'm like, nope, not doing it. Got in.
Oh yeah, then a VR, like, nope. No, I don't even think I would do.
Yeah,
I would want to do that.
I noped out of it. It was got in, saw the screen, saw where I was at. I'm like, nope, not doing it. Not now. Not now. I'm probably gonna freak out and get a heart attack. You know, staying in there too long. I'm curious. I'm so curious to playing it, just because it would be a whole brand new experience, and maybe it would help me overcome fears.
Yeah.
Or just Resident Evil. But yeah, I noped out of it. So I'll attempt to try it again. And actually getting the game instead of playing the demo. I'll attempt to just try it again. Soon. Hopefully. But yeah, it's just so real. In that sense, it's just very real. A majority of these VR games, especially the scary ones. I also tried what's that one called? The shooter there where you're on the roller coaster, Until Dawn, Blood Rush.
Oh yeah, yeah, the VR one.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, and I actually noped out of that too.
Really?
So yeah, I kind of noped out of it right at the very beginning. I'm like, okay, where is this going? And then I was looking through. It's just so immersive. And yeah, I don't know if I want to play too many scary games in there. The sense of doing it now with VR, it's enticing. I'm just very curious about it, but I'll slowly build myself up to play those games. I also tried a bit more of Riggs. I actually own Riggs, and Riggs, I know we played at E3 when PSVR was coming out there, Rob. It's just with VR, it's just about getting used to it in that sense, I guess. And just speaking about Riggs and like Resident Evil 7 and all these other games, it's about getting used to being immersed in the world. And I am so excited for Iron Man now. I'm very, very excited. Because I also played Megaton Rainfall, and that game is VR compatible, and it's like playing Superman the game. And you're pretty much like flying at super speeds, and that game wasn't built for VR like Iron Man is going to be built for VR, so that's why I'm so excited for Iron Man. Now, actually, you know, owning the PSVR at home and being able to witness Astrobot and witness some other games in VR and knowing that this is just not some knockoff experience, now I'm seeing there's just a real potential there. after playing, you know, more of Astrobot and trying out these games. And I'm very happy that Sony's continuing support with the VR. Again, so excited for Iron Man now. I can't wait. Like, I just want to, and then I'm going to get the Move control, so, because I want to feel like Iron Man now. Now that I see how most of these games are working, I definitely see how Iron Man is going to work, and it's going to be awesome in that regard. So yeah, I'm very, very excited, and maybe I'll have a story about Resident Evil 7 when I actually decide to get, you know, further in.
Yeah.
I'll probably be dead. So so yeah, VR, awesome. And I can't wait for just more of it. And more games for it to come out. There's already a bunch of games that I haven't tried, so I'm making my way through different games and seeing which ones are going to be suited for me, not the scary ones, but just checking stuff out. And No Man's Sky VR too, so that's another one, which I think is going to be very, very awesome as well. And we talked about it on one of the previous podcasts with the No Man's Sky VR. So yeah, VR, awesome. And finally, the last thing I've been playing. You see, so many things I've been playing.
So many. So very many.
Yeah. And finally, the last thing that I've been playing is Dreams Early Access. Yes, I was able to get into the Early Access there for Dreams. And yeah. I just totally blanked out there with Dreams. And Dreams is exactly what a lot of people thought. My opinion on Dreams is that it's exactly what a lot of people have thought. It's a very awesome concept. But in actually creating things, I think this is not going to be a mainstream thing. I think the mainstream part about Dreams is going to be seeing what other people create and actually dream surfing. Because so far, my experience with the Early Access is that even with the tutorials, the actual controls are very tedious to even create a lot of the things. And there's some real good tutorials in the game. It's just that the way to do things, there's just, the controls feel very off, and I wish there was other ways to do things with the controls. And there's going to be a lot of like thought process into actually creating and curating Dreams and artwork and gameplay and animations. There's just a lot of things to decipher going into Dreams. And I think a lot of people are actually going to be disappointed because, again, this is marketed as something of creating your own game, your own art. Pretty much creating anything that you would like, anything that you could dream of. But the tools are very, very tedious to do it with. And I'm glad that the early access exists, so that way when it does release, or, you know, if it ever does, because this could be just an early access thing. And I'm saying this just because, you know, I'm in it and I'm actually feeling the controls and I'm feeling how things are working out in the game. That I'm glad that the early access is out, so that way more content is out. But you have to be really in it to make content that actually works and fits. I mean, you could create anything, but I feel like a majority of the people who want to create things, you know, they're dream or the vision is going to end up to be crap, thinking that the tools, you know, would have been easier to actually produce. So in general, I think Dreams, it works if you're going to be dream surfing. And that's why the early access is a good idea to actually create content. But people who want to create stuff, they have to really, really get into it to actually take advantage of the tools that are presented, because it's an awesome package with the tools that you actually get. It's just that again, I find it, this is not going to be a beginner. This is even, the tools are even more tedious than Little Big Planet. If you thought you could make something in Little Big Planet and that was okay, Dreams is going to take you much more, it's going to take much more work to even make something like that. The tutorials are great. Don't get me wrong. Tutorials are so great, but there's a lot of other things where you do have to apply a lot of thought process into making it work. So Dreams, I'm impressed with the tool set. I see it working as people dream surfing and going into content, and I wish they could release this for free in the year or two down the line, and I think that would work better, and just release Dreams as a toolkit for the price. So yeah, that's with Dreams, that's how I think it should go. And I know a lot of people are probably going to disagree with me on that, but yeah, if I was meeting Molecule, I would actually, before the game gets released, I would actually put out a demo with the toolkit, with the dream surfing, and see how it goes. Do like a week long demo, just so you could get all the tools, everything in the game, in this toolkit, and see how people progress with it. And then from there, you know, analyze how people are using it. If people are using the creation mode and quitting fast, I feel like they should just launch stream surfing as its own thing and let people who want to actually use the tools launch that as its own thing as well, as a full release, like a $30 release, like the early access.
I'm surprised it like actually came out in some form, because they've been talking about it for years and showing it off, and at this point I was like, it's never going to come out.
Well, I was surprised too. That this is actually an early access, and you know, if you're in early access, you actually get the full game. But then after playing it and messing around with it, I think they have to really think over on exactly what they're trying to bring to the mainstream audience. Again, if you love creating stuff, you know, they should offer just a version where you create stuff and have the dream surfing as well. But for the mainstream, I feel like for people who don't create and who just want to visit Dreams, they should actually just release a free version of it.
Yeah, that would make sense. Because I imagine like a lot of people would be okay with just playing what other people have made, or seeing what other people have made.
Or even then, they could launch like a $5 version, and you could play, you know, whatever the dream surfing, you know, comes up.
Yeah.
In that sense. Then you could like search for things with $5 or something. Instead of just dream surfing. Dream surfing would be like a free version where you just go from one dream to another to another dream to another, and you can't pick. And that could be a free version. Then they could do another version that's probably like $5 or $10, where you can actually search for specific things. So they actually have a chance to actually observe on how early access is doing, because obviously I'm gonna play around with it with the tools a bit more, but again, they're very hard. Like the tool to actually get a full grasp of things, it's actually very hard, and it's not as intuitive as you would think. I mean, it allows you to make amazing results if you stick with it. But Mini Molecule definitely has a chance to shape this the way they want, and just with this early access first coming out, because now they can see, you know, what's going on and how people are using it. So, yeah, I'm... You know, I already bought it. I have early access, so I'm going to be, you know, I'm going to already have Dreams when it does release. But I really hope they actually look back and see how this thing is being used, to see other ways of actually marketing the game and releasing the game, so a lot of people could enjoy different aspects of the game, because not everybody's going to be a creator. Let's be honest. So
yeah, that's true. And that's how I was with like Little Big Planet. Like, I'd much rather play other people's levels. Even like Mario Maker, I'm happy playing other people's levels.
Yeah, so that makes me just very interested on how they want to go about dreams in general. So I'm looking forward to just what's the next step after early access. That's what I'm looking forward to hearing from Media Molecule, in that sense. Yeah, so yeah, Dreams, it's just that's a that's the last thing I've been playing there. I'm gonna be playing some more. Like I said, I'm gonna go into the tools a bit more and just see from there. I'm gonna actually be streaming it too, and we're gonna put that up on the website there when I'm gonna stream Dreams. So we could go ahead and create stuff. You could go ahead and chat, and if you guys want a duck, I'll try to make a duck at the best of my ability. But we're gonna go ahead and stream that there throughout the months here. But yeah, I'm very interested on going forward with early access and how just this thing is gonna release. But yeah, Rob, that's all I've been playing. Actually, yeah, that's actually a lot I've been playing.
Yeah, that is a lot. And that pretty much takes up what I've been playing, because I've been playing almost nothing. A little bit more of Dark Souls, and that's it. A friend of mine wants to play co-op of the first Borderlands, but other than that, we haven't even started that. So, I've been playing nothing. So, okay, let's go into topics then. Because, I got nothing. I'm slowly
No.
going through Dark Souls 3's DLC. I'm stuck at one boss right now in the Ring City. Yeah, I got nothing else really. I mean, it's not anything interesting. I still haven't beat the game yet, so. Oh well. But yeah, let's jump into topics. First one is Capcom is heavily teasing the Resident Evil 3 remake, even though the RE2 remake just came out 2 months ago.
And I'm excited. I'm like for it. I'm like, let's go. I'm ready.
I mean, I'm
You
cool
know, they
with
could
it
drop
because,
it.
I played the original on the Dreamcast. Well, the original three, Re the original Resident Evil 3 on the Dreamcast. Like after it had come out, after I played like Code Veronica. And I remember being very disappointed with it.
Wait, with three?
Yeah, with three, I thought it was just kind of missing something. But like I.
RE3 is more linear and more action based than all the other Resident Evil games during that time period.
Two is pretty linear and action based. But my problem I think was it was like really, really short. Like really short. But I have absolute faith with Capcom remaking it, and it'll still be really, really good.
But yeah, of it. If it follows Resident Evil 2's footsteps, the remake. Yeah, this is. I'm ready. This is gonna be like a sight to be seen. And I hope that they can release it this year and just go like, fuck it. We're just gonna release the same engine. Just
Okay, well,
just
it's still gonna,
remake Resident
yeah.
Evil
I mean,
2.
it's still gonna be the RE engine. I could see it releasing early next year, like with re how Resident Evil 2 released in February. I could see it releasing at either at the end of January or February. Wait, was it February or
Well,
January that it came out?
it was February. Well, January 20. Yeah, it was January.
January. Okay,
Yes, it was
yeah.
January. Yes.
So I could see it c coming out in January again, next year. I just like I said, I wasn't expecting it so soon, and it seemed like they'd been working on it for a little while. If in theory it's co close to being announced,
Yeah, and the teasers are coming from Twitter, from Capcom's
yes.
own, Twitter account there, as they keep mentioning and showing pictures of destroyed walls inside RPD there, and not a lot of people know that Resident Evil 3 actually happens, well, part half of Resident Evil 3 actually happens before Resident Evil 2.
Yeah.
So yes, there's a lot of walls in Resident Evil 2 remake that have been destroyed, and in Resident Evil 3, you do go through RPD, and those walls there are the walls that Nemesis busts through. So it is, you know, these teases are like very, very, I guess, pointed to a Resident Evil 3 remake in that sense. So yeah, I'm ready. They could launch it, you know, tomorrow. They could launch it any day of the week now. I'm ready. So
yeah, and I mean, it'd be crazy that they've continued on with like Resident Evil games this for what? This would be the third one in 3 years? Cause wait, or did Resident Evil 7 come out 2016? I don't remember.
Yeah, 2016.
Okay, it did. Okay.
Yeah.
And then we skipped.
I mean, we could do the Google search, but wanna use our brains here.
Eh. But even then, like it's quite a lot. In addition to obviously porting Resident Evil 0 to or 0, 1 and 4 to everything they can.
So we were close. Resident Evil 7 actually came out January 24th, 2017.
Okay, so it did come out in 2017. Okay, so they have been releasing a Resident Evil game every year for the last 3 years. Or maybe they released something before that too. I can't remember when Revelations 2 came out. But anyway. Yeah, I mean that's really cool. That they're doing that. I would have thought
hopefully they could get VR.
Yeah. It depends on how they're gonna do it. If it's like 7, then I could see it being VR, but I don't think it's gonna be like 7. I think it's gonna be a lot closer to 2 with the third person camera. Like a first person mode would be really cool. But it's not necessary.
So that's gonna be exciting when it does get revealed.
Oh yeah.
And just going back to Capcom, they have some more news.
Yes.
There that was announced this week, and it is has been revealed that Capcom is launching a home arcade machine featuring 20 games.
And 16 games.
I'm sorry. There, I read that wrong. I read that completely wrong. I swear I could have saw 4 more games there.
20 games would have been a lot more palatable, but we'll continue on.
Yes. So it's releasing with 16 games there, Rob. Thank you there for correcting me. 16 classic Capcom arcade titles. And it's a home arcade, and the console is actually just a arcade stick. A big arcade stick there. With Sanwa parts, which are premium parts, and the actual arcade stick is the logo of Capcom.
Yes, it is shaped like Capcom. There's two sets of sticks and buttons, and it is an inspired choice, shall we say, to have it designed like that. It looks gaudy.
Yeah, it does. It definitely looks like something Capcom would launch years ago.
Yeah. Like, I mean,
it's like ballsy.
It is ballsy.
Like for them now. Yeah. It's very, like, so full of themselves. Like, they know it's very gaudy and very out there.
But the thing is, like, they could have easily had, like, an arcade stick that was a lot more reminiscent to, like, Street Fighter 2 and stuff like that. Like, that setup. Like, they could have had it modeled after any of their game cabinets. Like, how, like, the sticks are set up. But instead, it's just a big-ass Capcom logo. Like, embossed. I mean, it seems like it's super reflective, so it seems, like, really cool. Like, it seems like good quality in terms of the actual product. Shall we say?
Yeah, well, there are Sanwa parts.
Yes.
So it is a premium buttons on this arcade stick home console thing. The buttons are actually clear. It's just very, it looks very, very gaudy again. And I don't know why they would make it clear. Like, you know, it looks like it's everything is just so transparent with everything. Like, I don't know who designed this thing. Like, I love it because the way it looks, but it's like it's like horrible for the consumer.
But it's got a lot of things going for it. Against it, I should say. A lot of things going against it. Before we do that, though, I want to read off the list of classic games.
Yeah, I was about to say, we're just talking about the actual console.
Because there's like, games in here that it irritates me that they're here. Well, let's go over them real quick. So first off, you have 1944, which is vertical shooter, maybe? Alien vs. Yes. Predator, which is a beat-em-up, which has never had a home release. Armored Warriors, which came out with the Capcom beat-em-up bundle just fairly recently. Capcom Sports Club, which I don't think has had a home release. Captain Commando, another beat-em-up.
Arcade.
Yeah. That was part of the beat-em-up bundle. Cyberbots. Darkstalkers, the very first Darkstalkers. Ego Fighters. Final Fight, again, another release fairly recently. Ghosts, Ghouls and Ghosts. Giga Wing. Mega Man, the Power Battle, which was released, I think, with the Legacy Collection?
Yes.
Pro Gear, which was a cave shooter published by Capcom, which hasn't had a home release. Street Fighter II, Hyper Fighting, Strider, and Super Puzzle Fighter II Turbo. The fact that you have a few games on here that have never had a home release is frustrating as hell. Because I've never played Alien vs. Predator, and I'm pretty interested in it.
Oh, it's so awesome. Well, I own my my arcade machine here, my arcade 1-up machine, which I modded. And yeah. That's actually there. And Alien vs. Predator is awesome. I actually played it in the arcade.
I mean, it was one of those
when it did release.
Alien vs. Predator, The Punisher, and Warzard / Red Earth, like the three games I want to play, because I never got to play them. They never got home ports, so I've always been interested in those three, and it's just kind of like tantalizing. And I would be more inclined to pick up the home arcade, if it had 20 games, if it had 30 games, And then you've got super weird ass choices. Like, why Darkstalkers 1? Why not, Darkstalkers 3?
3, yeah. And why Street Fighter 2? And why not Third Strike? And
well,
why
not
Alpha?
Well, not even necessarily 2. Third Strike. Like, even like, what's the most recent Street Fighter 2? Super?
Hyper.
Hyper, yeah. They could have released Hyper, like, the most recent Street Fighter 2. Like Final Fight, Final Fight, Captain Commando, Armored Warriors,
Street Fighter 2 Turbo. It would be Super Street Fighter 2 Turbo. That would be the one to compare to.
Yeah, and like Final Fight, Captain Commando, Armored Warriors, like literally just came out like a few months ago with the beat 'em up bundle. So it just seems like it's weird that they're. I mean, obviously they're going to double dip on some stuff. Like, I don't have any issue if, like, they had just, okay, Captain Commando, Final Fight as well. But why not, like, some other games? I mean, like, it'd be cool, like, if they kind of went with more niche stuff. Because obviously this is for the Capcom hardcore. Like, straight up, this is not going to be for, like, someone going to a Walmart and, like, hey, this is cool, I want it. No. And it doesn't have, like, that cool factor of, like, the 1-up arcades where it's like, hey, I have, like, a little mini, like, 3/4 arcade machine. This is specifically meant for the Capcom Hardcore. And the Capcom Hardcore kind of want more than what is on offer. I mean, sure, I guess you could look at, like, how the Super Nintendo Classic has, Star Fox 2, and that's the only way to get that. But, like, I don't know. It's just 200... I think it's about 230 euros. Or 200 euros. it's going to be about $250. And it hasn't even been announced for the U.S., just Europe.
So, I think for the U.S., you know, I think maybe we might get different games. And it's like you said, this is for the Capcom, like, enthusiasts and Capcom hardcore. But again, there should have been more niche titles and should have been upgraded versions of certain games there, like the Final Fight. It should have been Final Fight 3. For Mega Man, the Power Battle should have been Mega Man, the Power Battle 2. It should have been Darksiders 3. Like, it should have had a mixture of both. Like, I'm okay with Street Fighter 2, Hyper Fighting being there. But Darkstalkers 3 should have been there.
Yeah.
It shouldn't have been Darkstalkers 1. I'm okay with Final Fight being there, but it should have been Mega Man Power Battle 2.
And, like, I would have been okay with this list of 16 games if it was, I don't know, like a $50, $60 console that you can kind of just plug into your TV. Like, okay, it's cool, it's whatever. But they could have easily added more non-licensed Capcom games into this mix. Like, Gem Fighter,
Pocket Fighters?
Yeah, Pocket Fighter, Gem Fighter. I'm legitimately blanking on, like, everything.
Capcom. Well, Forgotten World, that's one they could have included. That's one that is more niche. Another one that I could have seen on there, again, the Alpha series.
They could have had the Alpha series.
JoJo's Bizarre Adventure.
I would love to have it there, but I'd say no. I wouldn't expect it because it's licensed. I was just thinking about, like, licensed games. I mean, not licensed games. Like,
Strider, where Strider is a license as well. Capcom is fully owned Strider.
Yeah, that's true. I would have liked JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. Cadillacs and Dinosaurs would have been cool.
Yeah, but Alien vs. Predator as well. It's not a it's a licensed product as well. So, you know, they could have definitely did more. They could have done X-Men vs. Street Fighter, or even Marvel Superheroes, or even X-Men: Children of the Atoms, the first game that introduced the Versus series.
Yeah, like, they could have added something else, especially since, like, Capcom seems to be okay. I mean, like, in good relationship with Disney, and they could have added a few Capcom-produced Disney games. But then again, I mean, if you think about it, Alien vs. Predator is now a Disney title. So, that makes sense. But yeah, it's just, I don't know.
Yeah, this list could have definitely been more varied with a bit more modern titles as well as old school titles, and it probably would have been a better product.
Yeah, when you look at, like, the Neo Geo, the SNK machine, like, their anniversary thing, I think that one was like $300, like a mini arcade, but it came with like 40 titles. And that would have been cool, like, if Capcom did something similar, again, including like 40 titles would have also been more useful. At like 16. So. And it would have also been cool if, like, you could separate the arcade sticks. Maybe, like.
Oh, yeah, that's actually. That actually does make sense. It does look like that would make sense. Just looking at this, the way this arcade stick looks.
You could, like, cut it between the P and the C, you know, cap on one side, com on the other side. And just, like, have, like, a little link cable between the two of them, or connect them wirelessly, like, the Bluetooth. Like, there's options to make it. And I understand that, you know, it's a high quality, in theory, not out yet till October, which is weird. It's supposed to be a high quality arcade stick, so I understand why they're going for the price. But there's so many other things they could have done to make it a better value proposition. And just having a few titles that they haven't released anywhere else, except for in the home market, is not quite the best option.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm waiting to see just when it does get released in the US, when they do announce the release of the US, to see if any of these titles change over to anything different.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Like, and that's not even like saying like the quality of the emulation and stuff like that. So we'll see what happens with it if it comes out here, or if maybe this is gonna be like the start of the Capcom's next retro bundle. Which I mean, like, I would if they release these 16 games for $60 like on a disc or a Switch cartridge, I'd buy it. Fuck yeah. But it's just kind of like 250. It's too much. It's too much for an impulse buy.
Yeah, that's for sure. And
So from one $250 item to the next.
yes, to the next one.
Yesterday, Xbox had, or Microsoft had their Xbox Live, which is a kind of Nintendo Direct-y type of thing. And they've been doing it for a while. They announced a few things, like the Ninja Gaiden 2 was finally backwards compatible. Yeah, backwards compatible and X upgradable. But they also announced a all digital edition of the Xbox One, which costs $250, which means it has no disc drive. And I mean, you know, it makes sense to have a box that is only digital. Fine with that. If Sony were to do that, it's fine with that. It's cool. But considering the fact that you can buy an Xbox One S for about the same price right now, if not cheaper, there that one doesn't exactly quite have the value proposition that it needs to be.
Yeah, and this was rumored for quite a while that there was going to be an Xbox One that had no disk drive. And I think what really hurts this all digital console is the actual price, for $249. Now, the Xbox One S is the actual retail price of it. I know we've seen it actually hit 199 a lot of times during the year, where it hit that 199 price mark, but the actual retail price for the Xbox One S is 299. So seeing an all digital version without the actual the UHD drive, and just it being all digital and just for $50 less is actually not. It's not as engaging, like the price is not as engaging as it should be. I feel like the price definitely is gonna be the hurdle there in terms of getting an all digital console to become a success. I feel like this should have actually launched at $199. It would have got more people used to the idea about an all digital console being priced maybe significantly cheaper than a physical console. But yeah, I feel like the price is not there, and that's a hurdle with the all digital console, especially with what, in my opinion, what Microsoft is offering with the all digital console there. This definitely should have launched at $199. That's just my thought on it. I just don't see a lot of people running out for this version. They should just rather get the Xbox One X.
Yeah, like it if 249 would have been okay if they added like a year of Game Pass or like a bundle of digital games with it.
But you do get two digital titles.
But more than two though. I mean, like there needs to, again, they need to have a little bit more to kind of, I guess, get people into it. Like I said, like a year of Game Pass in on top of the digital one. Makes sense because they're kind of like pushing Game Pass to be their big thing, and I think that would have done really, really well if they had done that.
Well, how about this? Pricing the console at $199 and then giving you 3 months of Game Pass there.
That would have been even better.
See, yeah, that, you know, that would have been more enticing for like an all digital future in that sense. Me, I'm against an all digital console. I like having physical discs. So that's me. But the seeing this news about the all digital definitely should have been priced lower for people wanting to attempt to go all digital. Because it would have looked better. You're right, at $249 with a 1 year of Game Pass would have definitely looked better, but it would have been even sweeter at $199.
Yeah, $199 for 3 months would have been a lot better, but I mean, if they're going to keep that price point, I mean, I'm sure it'll like drop down in price to $199, if not a little bit cheaper around the holidays, but still, it's kind of like if someone's going to go and buy an Xbox One S right now, their best bet is to get the one with the disc. The disk drive, and sure they may, you know, prefer digital games, but at least they can use it as a Blu-ray player or whatever.
So, a UHD player.
Yeah, exactly.
A 4K Blu-ray player, for sure. For sure. So it definitely, again, $199, perfect price for it. This definitely makes me wonder on how Microsoft sees their products in value, and it makes me wonder about next gen also, because again, just going into just our next topic there with the PlayStation 5, because now I feel like Microsoft is getting, you know how people say Sony is getting arrogant in their moves? I feel like Microsoft is actually getting arrogant with their moves, if that makes any sense. Like, I feel like there's certain things there with, Microsoft, especially this with the all digital, that should have definitely been $199. But again, we'll see how it pans out, because it might, you know, lower in retailers. But the Xbox One S, One X, the premium console there is just blows the Xbox One S away just in terms of specs, and those consoles should definitely be priced much cheaper than they are, just in general, and especially the all-digital version.
Yeah.
And it's just a test. I get that it's just a test there, but I feel like Microsoft is getting arrogant, and they're building some sort of false confidence in, I guess, in how people are reacting to their news, if that makes any sense.
I mean, I don't think they're necessarily getting arrogant. They are trying to do different things. It's just, yeah, the pricing on this is a little bit, could have been better.
Definitely. And like I said, it gets us to our next topic there. Yes. Just with the price point there on the Xbox One All Digital, you know, going into next gen now, just getting into the next topic now, Sony has revealed the PlayStation 5. And
well, they haven't really revealed it. They've officially announced that there will be a PlayStation 5, as if anyone was doubting it. And they announced the specs, like pretty detailed specs too. And it just out of nowhere, yeah, they're like, "Yeah, here you go." What?
So yeah, and it got everybody by surprise. It definitely got me by surprise. Just because it was one very, very detailed, specs already at this time, and Wired was actually able to get an interview with Mark Cerny, which is still engineering and managing, directing this whole PlayStation 5 console build-up and structuring the actual PlayStation 5. And yeah, they pretty much revealed the specs for it, and you know, next gen is coming.
Yep.
Mark Cerny is the lead system architect, and he did give off details to Wired, just what we're going to see in the PS, 5. So let me just, go ahead and run down the actual specs that, that were actually, given there. So the PS5 there is going to have 8-core AMD, 7-nanometer Zen 2 based on third generation Ryzen chipset computer processor set, ray tracing support with custom AMD Navi GPU, which is the graphic card there. So what we're hearing about the actual ray tracing is that it's going to have its own separate chip on the GPU itself. So it's going to be hardware produced ray tracing, unlike software produced ray tracing, which is done on current games for PC, which is running software ray tracing. So the PS5 is going to have some sort of hardware ray tracing supported in the actual processor itself. So that's very, very interesting. And it's almost as confirmed as a Naughty Dog employee actually saying that there is going to be actual hardware ray tracing. So that's going to be very, very crucial next gen, because even us talking about like HDR and how lighting and even animations are going to change the way we see games in the future there, and that's going to be the next evolution on how games are portrayed and how realistic games are. So that's an interesting specs there revealed with ray tracing support, it being hardware based, as well as the 8-core AMD, which is supposed to be a kick-ass processor. Rumors are they didn't give us the actual speeds of the processors, but the rumors are that they're going to be 3.2 gigahertz. Compared to the PS4 and the Xbox One, which are Jaguar-based cores, and they're pretty much netbook processors in terms of computer speeds. So this is a big jump. And, you know, with this processor jump, you're going to see more things like advanced physics, more advanced AI. So that's going to be very, very interesting to see. Another thing mentioned there with the PlayStation 5 specs is custom AMD unit for 3D audio, also aided by ray tracing, a big upgrade. So another custom chipset there for 3D audio, which people who do spend money on very good sound systems now are going to actually be able to reap the benefits there.
Yes.
With that custom chip there on the board. Another thing that was mentioned that was very detailedly mentioned was that there's going to be an extremely fast, high-end, custom SSD solid-state drive storage, faster than any solution currently available on the PC. So Mark Cerny mentioned Spider-Man load times on the PlayStation 4 Pro are 15 seconds on the PlayStation 4 Pro. On the next-gen PlayStation, they're going to be 0.8 seconds, and that's about 19 times faster than the current load times on a PlayStation 4 Pro. So what this means is that this is going to be either a proprietary solid-state drive that I could see it as something just being there as cached. So load up the game in, you know, this 1 terabyte drive, while there'll still be another hard drive in the actual system. There'll be a hard drive or a hybrid of a hard drive in the system, but the game moves over to this other custom solid state drive there and actually loads up faster using the solid state drive, this custom solid state drive. That's what I see could be happening there, where the game is like cached onto that custom and solid state drive. So produce you know, much faster loading times, Which would be awesome there. And a lot of games this gen definitely experience a lot of long loading times, especially the Souls games. So yeah, that's definitely awesome. And I kind of want to see exactly the design on this high end custom solid state drive to see if that's the case, where that solid state drive is just used to load up the game and you'll still have another hard drive there just storing the game itself, where you can store the games. So another thing mentioned was that the PS, the next PlayStation, is actually going to technically support 8K. Well, again, that's just like the PS4 supporting 4K as well. We're definitely not going to see 8K content.
We're like, I feel like at this point, 1080p is still kind of a struggle.
Exactly.
But there'll probably be like a lot more checkerboarding. What is it? Checkerboard rendering to get close to 4K, as opposed to like something native like the 1080p that we're still struggling to get. So 8K, I feel like is not. I feel like it's still too early to talk about 8K.
Yeah, it's definitely still too early. Oh, and another thing mentioned, there's a new VR platform, which is strongly hinted at, but the next PlayStation is going to be supporting the PlayStation VR on day one. So that's awesome there. And what I'm hoping is, so the one thing I actually don't, that I don't like much about the PSVR there, it's just, you know, by having one in the house, is actually all the wires that it actually produces. That's one thing where I could see the next gen of VR making up for it. But being able to just use the PSVR on the new system there, and potentially the new system adding more processing to the PSVR there, could actually create much better game experiences and clearer quality images on the PSVR. So that's exciting to hear that PSVR is going to be supported as of day one. You know, PSVR 2 is in the works. Something that mentioned that Death Stranding might be a cross-gen title. So that's interesting, in the sense that, you know, Sony had those the last three big releases are Death Stranding, The Last of Us 2, and The Ghost of Tsushima. So you could be seeing a lot of cross-gen titles in that sense. Going over to the PS, the new PlayStation's actual launch. So the new PlayStation is going to have physical media. God bless. There's going to be physical media on there. It's going to be fully backwards compatible with the PS4 at the very least. And dev kits are already with developers. So it's been already 4 years in development, and it's going to release 2020. So yeah, that's a lot of like news. Like, it's a lot of like info to digest there. Mm-hmm. With the new PlayStation, I'm actually surprised just on how this was like laid upon us.
It's usually like whenever like they reveal the system, it's always like, here's the box it's gonna be in, and then like nothing on specs for like a while, as opposed to now where they're like, yeah, here are the specs that we're planning for, and then we'll reveal the system later.
Yeah, so this gets me like, it gets me excited that they're actually like coming forth with everything, and you know, it actually gives us the hardcore gamers sometimes to actually like, I guess, theorize and, you know, do some theory crafting there on, you know, exactly how this thing is gonna run and, you know, these specs, and we can actually like, they're relatable, like they're not impossible. This is not an impossible task. The only thing, the one thing that I find the most interesting is the hardware ray tracing, and again, the custom solid state drive.
Yeah,
that's gonna be interesting because, you know, again, the solid state drive details, just what was given, it's like, wow, like, okay, this is gonna be a huge change, and it's a custom. So this is all going to be custom, and this could be the differentiating factor between the big two consoles for next gen, between Microsoft and Sony. So I'm excited to see what more news we get out of it and how the news is trickling out.
Yeah,
I rather hear it like this instead of, you know, like you said there, where it's revealed at a big conference. And I know that's what Microsoft is probably planning to do this E3.
Maybe. I feel like if they do it, they'll probably do what they did with the Xbox One, where they had like a little reveal like a few weeks before E3 with some more information during E3. Because like we're in a shakeup in how companies are presenting their product. Before E3 used to be the big thing, like everyone would announce their hardware around E3 because that was the place where more eyes could see it. But now E3 isn't as necessary because, like, you know, Nintendo, Microsoft, Sony can announce anything at any time and it would still be picked up by everyone. So I don't necessarily think that E3 is a good spot for anyone to announce something, because again, they can announce it any day of the week, any day of the year, and then all eyes would be on them. So I don't see Microsoft doing anything like that, but who knows? They could straight up just announce the Xbox One successor this year at E3, but I feel like they're just gonna have like their own little conference or video thing and just be like, "Here, here's it is. This is what to expect."
Yeah, very, very exciting times there with Next Gen, and again, these specs here, like, I'm all in now in terms of wanting to know a lot more about the PlayStation 5 or the new PlayStation in that sense. So I'm very interested as we get closer to E3 to see if Sony's gonna, you know, do a bit more of this releasing of info here and get actual gameplay things out. That would be very interesting just to see how it tips, you know, the hype factor. And is there anything like you're looking forward to with like the PlayStation 5 or just the next gen consoles there? Again, the whole like loading time aspect, that's actually pretty dope, and I'm looking forward to hear more about that.
I mean, I'm interested in it, but it's even though we have a lot of specific specs, it still feels kind of nebulous, without actually, you know, seeing it in person, or at least, you know, getting a good glimpse of hands-on what to expect. This is all just like, okay, cool, all right, that's fine. I mean, the only thing that like interests me is backwards compatibility with PS4. And I wonder. It seems like it might have upgrades for PS4 games, like the Spider-Man load times. But I don't know if it's just going to be load times, if it's going to be visuals as well. But yeah, I got nothing in terms of like what I'm expecting. I'm just, not that I'm lowering my expectations. I'm just, until we get a little bit closer and like things start to fall into place exactly, kind of just seeing where they're going with it. I really got, like, it's like, all right, cool. Like, physical media is great. Like, the CPU, GPU thing, cool. I just want to see what to expect in terms of visuals, like, actual hands-on. Not necessarily hands-on, but, like, what the devs that have the dev kits have to say about it or what they can show. I feel like until we have, like, that, you know, PlayStation Experience or whatever they did with the PS4 release, it's kind of like the words are weightless right now for me. Like, I would like to see I would like to see it in action. But yeah.
Yeah, I guess it's you know, just more here, and I guess as we get closer to E3, we'll probably hear some more about just next gen.
Yeah, I can see Sony a lot of
has a relatively, Yeah, Sony has already said here 2020 is going to be the year. So it's we're definitely going to be seeing more news on next gen this year.
Yeah, this year, early next year for sure. I imagine the systems are going to come out next holiday, 2020.
Oh, for sure. And I guess that's it for our show. And so I guess we're going to close the floodgates.
Yep.
Oh, I think you were waiting for that one.
I was waiting for that one, yeah.
We're closing the floodgates and we're reining it in. And yeah, so we're ending the show here. And so you guys definitely go ahead and like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter, and also like us and subscribe to us on iTunes, the Google Play Store, and Spotify as well. So you could constantly be in the know when DPR does update with a new episode. Just definitely subscribe to us there. You see, I almost forgot everything again.
Yeah,
they're all getting tangled now. But go ahead and subscribe to us. We'll be back here every week. And yes, thank you for listening. And we're closing the floodgates, and we'll see you next week.
Catch you on the flip side.